Good morning, everyone. My name is Matt, and I am most definitely an alcoholic. And it's good to be here. It's good to be sober. It's good to be alive. Rhonda, thank you for asking me whether you knew you were or not. It's good to be here. You know, I try to believe that there are no mistakes in AA, you know, and where two or more gathered, God is definitely present. And, you know, it's made all the difference in the world. My sobriety date is April 12th, 2010. I have a sponsor. His name is Jackie Grass. And this is my home group, the 6:30 a.m. PG and chill daily reprieve meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I am very, very grateful, and I hold on to those things. I hold on to those things because my life depends on it. And I'll tell you a little bit about what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. You know, I come from a long line of alcoholics and really heavy drinkers. And I'm the youngest of four, and I just follow right in line behind the rest of my family. You know, my family gave me lots of reasons, lots of excuses, lots of justifications to drink. You know, I grew up in a house where I was terrified all the time, and there was alcohol free flowing and drugs free flowing. And our house is the house in the neighborhood that your parents told you to stay away from for one reason or another. And so it's like making friends and keeping friends from a very young age has always been a challenge. You know, being able to relate to other people, never felt a part of, never felt loved. And just I was always, you know, like I'm on my own. It's just me against the world. And that's the attitude that that I had as a young kid growing up, and I still can have today. You know, I had my first drink when I was seven. That was I can't really say that's my first drink, but that was the first time I drank alcohol, and I got the effect produced by alcohol that I was going to chase for the rest of my life. You know, that household is nothing but terror. And when I drank the alcohol, that fear went away, and it was replaced with, I don't care. And I just chased that, and I chased that, and I chased that. You know, 12 years of age, I got a carton of Marlboro Reds and a bottle of vodka for my birthday. I ended up moving from the hills of Pennsylvania out to Yorba Linda, California, which is a huge culture shock. I showed up with my Wrangler jeans, my cowboy hat, my cowboy boots to Yorba Linda, and all the kids were wearing OPs and Vans, and I didn't fit in. And I remember looking across the field and seeing that puff of smoke out in the field. And it's like, those were my people, you know, and I went out there, and it didn't take long for me to find out, you know, in that neighborhood, like I have in previous neighborhoods, where to go, who to talk to, and what it is I need to do with who in order to get what it is that I wanted. And that is the way I've lived my life. And, you know, I moved from Yorba Linda to Fullerton to Long Beach, and I love Long Beach. I tore that city up. I went to junior high and high school in that city, and I didn't draw a sober breath the whole way through junior high and high school. And I remember coming to out of blackouts in high school, and I went to Wilson High School, and in between each building there was this bridge. And I would come to out of a blackout on that bridge, and I wasn't sure if I was coming to going to or if I was coming from class. I wasn't sure if it was morning, if it was afternoon. I just, you know, and that was pretty much the state of confusion that I lived my life in. And my friends and I would, you know, we would just get loaded, just absolutely plastered, and we'd race our cars and up and down. There's a road there called Appian Way, and it had bridges as it went from, you know, Long Beach to Naples Island and so forth, and we would get airborne, and at one time I had a four-wheel drive, and we'd like tear up the beach, and we would steal. There was nothing sane or decent about our behaviors in those days. And you know, by the time it was all said and done, you know, I was afraid to go back into that city for many, many years because somebody might recognize me. And it wasn't until I got sober that I was able to go back there. And, you know, I did my first mental institution in the second grade. Next time I was in high school, a girlfriend of mine went there, and I followed in behind her. And, And I told them my tales of woe of how bad my parents were and how bad my family was. And then they said, well, if we had a father like you or a mother like you, we would drink too. And that was my ticket. And I rode that for a long time. My drinking ended up like this. I ended up, I was in Orange County, working for the cable company, and my day would start like this. I'd wake up in the morning and I'd smoke a couple of joints, I'd drink a beer, I'd go to work. I'd do a big old line on the hood of my company truck with the general manager, and then I'd go out and start climbing telephone poles all day. And when you mix all that together and you're 30 feet in the air, that doesn't go very well, I remember I was up on a telephone pole and I strapped off and I pulled forwards up to the what we call the span line, and I hit a bolt with my head and I knocked myself unconscious. And I hung up there for a period of time. How long, I don't know. When I came to, I was just covered in blood. And I climbed down off that telephone pole and I drove into the shop. And of course, they were not happy with me, so they grounded me. And I started working in dispatch, and then I started coming out of blackouts underneath my desk in dispatch, with HR and my boss looking down at me, giving me that look. And we all know that look. It's like, what's wrong with you? And I didn't have an answer. I didn't know. I didn't know. I just knew no matter where I was, no matter what I was doing, I was just not okay. I was not okay with me. I was not okay with you. I was not okay with what's going on around me. And I couldn't drink enough. I couldn't drink enough. If I drank enough, I was blacked out or passed out. But I just couldn't make that big ache go away. And so they put me on a plane and flew me to New Orleans, and where I went into a mental institution, and it was a lockdown unit, and I was there for 9 months. That became my home. And I was in a locked ward, so I had my stereo equipment sent out, and I would every week I would get a package in the mail, and inside that package was a teddy bear, and inside that teddy bear was everything that I needed to get me through that week. And in those days, they were doing the inner child work. I don't know if any of you remember those. And I'd take my teddy bear and my book by Lou Webb, and I'd go out and do my inner child work and get loaded on the swings. And I didn't draw a sober breath while I was in this lockdown work. I was continued to partying in there, and then I started hosting parties in the gymnasium of this mental hospital. Friday or Saturday night, there's this big party with music and everything going on, and so forth. And I loved it. I didn't have to work. I wasn't accountable for anything. I just continued on partying until the insurance ran out. And long story short, I ended up on the streets of Hollywood, homeless for 3 years, Hollywood and LA, and then down to Orange County. And I was seeing a therapist, and he told me he was going to see me if I kept showing up loaded. Yesterday, I heard somebody say that, for some reason, at that moment in time, there's that moment in time where somebody says something, where there's a crack in my armor and I hear it. And that was my moment in time. He says, there's AANA. He listed all the A's. He said, pick one and go. And so I went to a payphone and opened up the Yellow Pages. And my first meeting was on a Tuesday afternoon at somebody's home. And it was a bunch of bikers. And I walked in there and I sat through the meeting. And I can't remember anything other than the guy's name was Wade. This is in 92. So Wade ended up taking me to other meetings, and I stayed sober for a period of years, but I didn't do what we do here. I kept doing what I was doing out there, and that's running cons, coming in looking for money, looking for food, looking for a place to stay, looking for sex, and I couldn't stay sober. And I did that twice. I put 8 years together twice, and I couldn't stay sober. This time, I couldn't get sober. It took me 9 months to get 30 days. And the difference for me this time is the sponsor that I have and my level of willingness and desperation and pain. And I couldn't die. I couldn't live. I couldn't figure it out. I asked Jackie to be my sponsor. I went to Legacies Group in South Orange County, and Jackie asked me if I was an alcoholic, and I said yes. And he asked me if I was willing to go to any length to win victory over alcohol, and I said yes. And so he said, fine, you call me every morning at this time, and we're going to meet once a week, and we're going to go through the book. So we started meeting every Sunday before the Legacies Group. And he read the book to me, sentence by sentence, paragraph by paragraph, page by page. And that big book came alive. I'd spent, 16, 18 years going through that book before, and it was just black and white. It was two dimensional, and I really didn't get it. And I really didn't understand what being an alcoholic is, and what alcoholism is. And if I could put the plug in the jug and sit my butt in the chair and not drink and have everything be great, then I wouldn't need to be here. I wouldn't need you. But the truth of the matter is, I put the plug in the jug. I sit in the room and I go crazy and I get angry. I get really angry. I get violent. I get foul. And there's nothing decent about me sober. And it's just the pain is just incredible. And the only thing that takes that away is drugs and alcohol. As Jackie took me through that book page by page, paragraph by paragraph, I started to get a sense of relief. When he took me through the steps, when I did my fourth step with him, I knew that I was going to have to tell him everything. I knew I was going to have to tell him everything that was going on in that house when I was a kid. I was going to have to tell him everything that I did as a kid. I had to stop looking at the world as being a victim and looking at what everybody had done to me, and turn that around and change my perspective and start talking about what it is that I did to other people, how it is that I inflicted harm, how it is that I brought confusion and insanity to what would otherwise be a normal situation. I was the author of my own misery and your misery. And it took me a long time, but I had to tell Jackie all that stuff, and that man did not throw me away. And he did not judge me, and he's still my sponsor today. And I can go to him, and I can be honest with him, and I can tell him things that are going through my mind, things that I've done sober. I'm slimy and I'm sneaky when I'm out there drinking and using, and I can blame drugs and alcohol. Sitting in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm slimy and I'm sneaky in these rooms, but I can't blame drugs and alcohol, and I can't blame, anybody else. I'm stone cold sober, and I remember every little thing that I do. And so I have to have a place to take that, So Jackie and I, he told me that I didn't have to live that way anymore, and that we have a solution. And as we go through the steps, and I'm sitting on 6 and 7, and I'm working on 8 and 9, and I'm making amends. My toughest amends is with my mother. And it's taken me 11 years to be able to make that amends and complete that amends. And it's taken the death of my mother in order to make that happen. He's walked me through so much. There has been nothing that I haven't been able to bring to my sponsor or to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous where I haven't found a solution for. It's taken me the pain and the misery that I've gone through with the family relations and people relations. When we talk about the bedevilments of our alcoholism, when I'm prey to misery and depression, and I'm incapable of forming true relationships with other people, and I'm incapable of maintaining employment. That is me stone cold sober. And it's taken every bit of work and continue to work in order for me to stay here, to stay on the other side of that. If I stop doing my prayer meditation, if I stop being of service, if I stop, showing up, all of that comes back really fast. And I have to stay diligent and active in. My first commitment in AA was a greeter. And for me, that's one of the most important commitments in AA, because nobody wants to be it, but it's also been one of the most rewarding. That's why I learned how to say hello to you. That's why I learned how to look at you in the eye. That's when I realized that there's other people in the room other than me. I could walk into the room of Alcoholics Anonymous, and when I walk in, I look at you, and I look at you looking at me, and as looking at you looking at me, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking about me, and I don't like you. That's the attitude that I walk into with sober. The spiritual experience tells me that I'm going to have a change of outlook. Everything about me is going to change. And I have experienced that several times in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it first starts by taking the commitment, and that first commitment of being a greeter. And then I got to be, I had the privilege of becoming a commitment coordinator at Legacies Group and so forth. And I started taking commitments at Monday Night Bellflower. And what I found is that the only time that I have any type of serenity, any type of room of service, and so I'm a service junkie. I have a commitment at every meeting I go to, and because it works, It works because otherwise, the alarm will go off at 4:15 a.m. and I can come up with a thousand reasons not to get out of bed and show up. The alarm can go off at 6 p.m. for me to log into another meeting and be of service. I can come up with every reason. We were kind of chatting before the meeting, and it's like, anytime that I'm asked to be of service or I'm asked to talk in a meeting, the day or so prior, I try not to let run through my head, what it is I think it is that I want to say, which is, there's really no there at that point. But, getting to that meeting, it's like, oh, I don't want to do this. I'm not going to say the right thing. They're going to judge me, blah, 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 blah. And it's just like that, the alcoholism's going on in my head. But the moment I show up and I sit down and I start talking, God is present. God is present. And then I can breathe and it's good to be here. So I can like try to talk my way out of this morning, and I log on and I text Rhonda and I let her know that the room is open. And then Julie shows up and Julie smiles and says hello, and I say
Five
hello
minutes.
back and I
Five minutes.
exhale a little more. Rhonda shows up. We kind of laugh and chat about, was it you that I wanted to speak, or was it somebody else I wanted to speak? Well, you're going to speak even if it was by accident. We kind of laugh about that a little bit, and it's like, and I exhale a little bit more. And then Mike shows up and I exhale a little bit more. And by the time the meeting starts, I'm right where I'm supposed to be. I'm right in the center of Alcoholics Anonymous, being active in and part of. Early in my sobriety, my clock isn't changing here.
That was 5 minutes.
Early in my sobriety, I was diagnosed with cancer, and I went through that battle. And then a little bit later on, a year later, I was diagnosed where it had returned again. And that for me, I never, it's kind of like you would think that you'd be able to go through that sober, right? And what I found is in the middle of that, in the middle of all of that, keeping my commitments, putting newcomers in the car and driving them to a meeting, putting newcomers in the car and driving from Long Beach out to Solvang to talk at a meeting. Anytime that I'm of service, I'm okay right here, right now. The 10th step I do at least once a day. At least once a day, I do a 10th step. I do spot check inventories on a daily basis. I know when I'm wrong. I know when I'm being slimy and sneaky. And so, there's no getting away from that. But that gives me it gives me a solution. I can stop and clean it up. There's been a lot of people in this room that I've had to talk to out of the meeting and say, hey, I was a jerk and I was wrong. And there's many people in the rooms that have done the same with me. And what my experience is with that is, I come to love you. I come to love everybody in this room because we get to be raw and we get to be real. Now, I love what Larry Thomas says. The only thing you get here is basic sober human being. And that has been so true for me. I make mistakes on a daily basis, cleaning up and moving on. And I get to allow you to do the same with me. And I get to do the same with you. And that is for me is how I've come to form true relationships with other people. When I first came to this room, there's some people in here that I judge because I do that, kind of like you are with me, And over periods of the last 2 years that we've been doing this together, there isn't a thing I wouldn't do for you. I absolutely love you and I adore you. I have been able to become, I got sober at the Monday night Bellflower Big Book Group, and that has given me the foundation. I've been able to come to PG, and I've been able to develop and to grow and to learn and to become more useful than I was then. Pacific Group, this meeting in particular, has allowed me a relationship with you and with my higher power that I've never known before. That has just been an absolutely miraculous thing, and I will never be able to repay. But I will show up every day. I'll be as active as I can. I'll let my gratitude speak through my actions. If you want to know what I do, come do what I do, then you'll know what I do. It's monkey see, monkey do, right? How free do you want to be? I've gotten to know Mike C quite well, and Billy and Rhonda. I absolutely love you. I love your and Julie. I can name everybody in here. You're in my heart, and I would not want to be have to go on, or just go through a day without you. You're a staple in my life, and I will be forever grateful. So that is all I have. Turn it back over to the group. Thank you for my sobriety.